Welcome to Health Center in the Catskills on WIOX Radio. I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program, where we focus on the impact of local, state, national, and global issues on the health of the individuals, families, and communities in the Catskill region. I cover mental health issues a lot on this program because mental health problems have worsened in the United States, particularly since the COVID pandemic, although there were signs that things like anxiety and depression were on the rise even before that. It's particularly a problem among young people as they appear to be experiencing higher rates of anxiety and depression, among other problems. It's crucial for local communities to examine how to promote mental health and how to ensure that people with mental health problems are able to get the help they need. But local communities often lack the resources to ensure that they have robust mental health services. They depend on funding and support from the federal government as well as from their state for both the funding and policies that can support community efforts on mental health. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, a nonprofit organization that provides advocacy, education, and other supports for people affected by mental illness. James Norton is the Government and Community Affairs Manager for NAMI New York State, and I'm delighted to have him join me today to talk about what happened or didn't happen around mental health issues in this most recent New York State legislative session that ended on June 6th. Welcome to Health Center in the Catskills, James.
Well, thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure, and I've heard wonderful things about you and about your work, and NAMI New York State really does a great job. But tell listeners who may not be familiar with NAMI, tell them a little bit about NAMI and NAMI New York State.
So again, the title is National Alliance on Mental Illness. Each state has their statewide affiliate, and then throughout all of the states, we have different local affiliates. Nationwide, there's about 650 local affiliates. They can be metropolitan areas, like we have a NAMI Rochester that covers Monroe and Wayne counties. We have NAMI Schenectady, which covers just one county. We have St. Louis Jefferson that covers two counties. We also have our largest affiliate is NAMI NYC. They cover Manhattan, Brooklyn, and Bronx. So we have a lot of affiliates nationwide. It was originally started as an organization by two parents who felt that there weren't enough services for themselves as parents going through the issues with mental health and having a family member who has severe mental health. But also they just felt like there weren't enough services for their sons who had schizophrenia. So they started the organization back in the 70s. It's grown to be the largest mental health advocacy organization in the country. Mm-hmm. At the local level, it looks probably closer to AA than most people think. At least before getting really involved, I didn't realize how much locally happens. But we have support groups like family to family and peer to peer. We have some specific support groups like Per ER is for ER staff, and Overwatch is for law enforcement. Mm. We also have NAMI Homefront for veterans and their families, and we do a lot of in-school presentations like Ending the Silence. At the national and state level, though, we look probably closer to the ACLU, right? We have a lot of researchers. We have a lot of advocacy orgs we partner with, and we organize advocacy days. So it's really an organization that really is founded on mutual aid but has grown into this entity that does a lot of research and a lot of advocacy work.
And, you know, for many of our listeners, the local affiliate is NAMI Delaware and Otsego counties. And, the Rena Reba has been a stalwart activist in that group and keeps us well informed, and I'm grateful for her support. So tell us about you're leading this government affairs work. Tell us about what NAMI New York State's priorities were in this last legislative session and what happened during that session. What got passed, what didn't get passed, what's most exciting to you that did happen?
So we had a pretty ambitious legislative agenda we always focus on kind of five priority areas. One is equitable access to mental health supports. The other, supporting the behavioral health workforce, mobile crisis and voluntary commitment, and assisted outpatient treatment, addressing the way criminal justice handles mental health issues, and youth and family supports. Under each of those kind of banners, those general areas of advocacy, we have a host of bills that we support specifically. Those bills, some passed, some did not, but we had about 60 bills by the time we had our priorities list to all of our letters of support. So mental health can reach a wide array of things. We have bills around mental health parity, making sure that insurance companies aren't giving you inappropriate denials or denying care that people actually need. It's still an ongoing fight with things like retrospective denials, as in clawbacks. They originally approve a treatment and then subsequently decide after you've already received it that you don't need it. There's workforce issues like social workers, mental health counselors are some of the lowest paid master's degrees, but there's also just, are we covering enough services like art therapy coverage, right? New York State has made that an officially licensed profession, but they didn't give them the ability to bill for it. When it comes to, mobile crisis, we're big sponsors of the 988 program. NAMI has a helpline run locally, nationally, statewide. If your local doesn't pick up, your state will. If your state doesn't pick up, the national will. But we really fought for 988 because our helpline was kind of a de facto 988 beforehand. So people were calling us, looking for services, but also people were calling us in times of crisis. Under that same banner, though, we look to improve ways like 730 exams where people are being evaluated for their competency to stand trial, or we look at whether or not there are enough comprehensive psychiatric emergency programs like psych walk-in centers. When it comes to criminal justice, the big one this year was our Treatment Court Expansion Act, and we'll get back around to that one, but it's been something we've been heavily advocating for, making sure every county has a mental health court, just like every county is required to have a substance use court or an opioid court. But, unfortunately, that doesn't include mental health. And so even when cases are co-occurring, there's still problems there. And especially when it comes to youth, we've been advocating a lot around the CK versus McDonald's settlement and, hopefully increasing youth mental health reimbursement rates. A lot of youth are on Child Health Insurance Plus, and so a lot of them get reimbursed at the Medicaid rate, which is one of the lowest rates, and it makes it very financially difficult to maintain programs that are specific for youth for mental health services.
James, you mentioned something about a settlement. Can you say more about that? The McDonald settlement? Did I get that right?
Yep. So CK versus McDonald. McDonald is DOH commissioner. So that was around youth mental health services access in the state of New York. New York State Department of Health and New York State Office of Mental Health were found to be violating some rules around providing adequate services that are community-based for youth. And violating the Olmstead Act, as well as an agreement that they had with the Medicaid system, and a way that would push a lot of youth into inpatient programs, even if that wasn't the most appropriate setting of care, just because they hadn't appropriately put out enough services for youth to be community-based. Right now, OMH is actually doing a number of listening sessions on that one. That's the Office of Mental Health. And we can put that information out through our website. We can share it with you all if you want to link to it in this page. There's ways to register and go and share your story if you were trying to engage the mental health system as a youth or as a parent of someone who's a youth and just had difficulty navigating it. New York State is currently looking at the ways we can really improve that system and help get more youth the services they need.
Go ahead.
Sorry, going back to the legislative session, because that was a case that was settled in 2025. There's a couple of big things that we got through the budget this year. One was not a NAMI backed bill as much as we just kind of supported it. But right now, all of New York State is in 10th grade. People are going to get trained in mental health first aid. So that program was written into the state budget. There's about $17 million to fund programs to go around the state and teach all youth to respond to somebody who's in a mental health crisis. One of our big victories this year was getting more services for co-occurring disorders. There's a dual certification process now for programs to be licensed by New York State Office of Mental Health and New York State Office of Addiction Services and Supports. Especially in rural areas, right, you don't really want to go to a program that is licensed by Office of Mental Health with your mental health disorder and substance use disorder and be told, oh, sorry, you have to go to a program. You have to go to a different program for your substance use disorder. And you have to go to our program for your mental health disorder, right? We want to see more programs that are, you know, duly licensed. We often call it one patient, one license. Another big victory for us this year was around 1130 waivers or 1115 waivers. I apologize. That is a waiver from Medicaid that allows for a demonstration project that can be beneficial for health outcomes without really costing anything extra or possibly being cost savings in the long term. The 1115 waiver specifically we were looking for was around people being released from jails or prisons, being able to get into Medicaid up to 30 days earlier. That way, they are still receiving medical care while they are behind bars, so the cost is really neutral. But since they are on Medicaid already, they can have all of their appointments for continuing their medication-assisted treatment for substance use disorders or continuing their medication for mental health disorders as they transition from leaving correctional facility to the community. And another large kind of victory for us this year was around that 730 exam process. We worked with the New York State mental hygiene directors to kind of reform the way that people are being determined competency to stand trial. Mm-hmm. Too many folks were kind of waiting in jails, despite having severe mental illness and despite the jails not being the most appropriate settings. Most of the jails will even tell you that. But just because the process and the lack of you know, qualified individuals who can do the evaluation was creating such a backlog, we'd have people in county jails for months, if not years, trying to determine if they can even stand trial. And we couldn't really transfer them to an OH facility until that was determined. And so that created this kind of bad situation where we had folks with severe mental illness in correctional facilities. There's a whole list of other bills I can mention, but those are
great.
Those are some of the big takeaways from this year.
So I have to say, as I listen to you, my understanding was that because of the delay in the budget, it was at least a month overdue. I want to say 6 weeks or longer overdue, and that a lot didn't get done, that it really interfered with the time for the legislature to really have the debates and discussions that were needed on non-direct budgetary issues. But it sounds like it didn't get in the way for you all.
It does. There's an agenda that you plan out when you start a legislative season where you kind of prioritize the things that are going to be in the budget earlier in the year, and then you kind of wait until they're done, you know, focusing on the budget before you start talking about the non-budgetary items. And so even before the budget was due, we just kind of had to let our non-budgetary items start going out because we needed to get the information out to the members to vote on them. It is something that definitely affected a lot of folks trying to get bills through. I think, and there are better people to answer this than me, but actually they passed roughly an equivalent number of bills as they usually do, which is interesting. I think there's just a lot of things that were big ticket items that kind of got pushed aside. Right, there's a couple of bills on our list that were, you know, allowing a mental health counselor to sign off on workers' comp claims, just because licensed mental health counselors with diagnostic privilege was not a credential when they created legislation that allowed mental health professionals to sign off on workers' comp claims. So that was just fixing that regulatory oversight. That's something that passed. We expected to get signed. But we were able to get really those little fixes in this session. So we still had 10 or 11 bills that we worked on this year passed. And right. There was one really big area that they did focus on and got a lot of bills through, and it's AI. We worked out with our partners at Common Sense Media, and there's a bill that passed that says you can't put AI in children's toys. There's a bill that says AI chatbots cannot engage with minors in ways that discuss things like adult content, mental health, committing crimes, or engage in things like sycophancy, where they just tell this person, oh, yes, it's a great idea, you should do it, or give the people the answers they really want to hear. So there's, we were not alone in, you know, a number of AI bills going through, but this was a good year for our tech and mental health side of the programming.
It's interesting because just this morning I was reading on Medscape about a case in which a man is suing ChatGPT because he put in his conditions, his symptoms, and it came back and said, oh, you're, you know, just sit it out, just wait, you know, just relax kind of thing. And it ended up being a terminal diagnosis that he eventually had. And, you know, he's suing ChatGPT for practicing medicine. And wrongly so, you know. So
One of our bills that unfortunately didn't go through, and I'd say that this is one of the larger items we were kind of disappointed, there's a bill to ban AI practicing as a therapist for anyone. Because there are people who are currently researching that as a potential item to have AI replace therapists.
Yes.
We really think that the loss of human connection there is bad. We also know that the AI algorithms tend to default to most common, right? It's a predictive analytics software, so it goes based on all of the answers and things it's read in the past.
Yeah.
Here's the most likely next word. And so that means that if you type in, I'm depressed, to something like ChatGPT, it tends to say, okay, well, you've got depression, and here are the medications you can take. But just being slightly depressed is not enough to know you have generalized depression. You might have, you know, bipolar disorder, just is feeling depressed right now. You might have just given birth, and this is postpartum. There's a number of things that, you know, diagnosis is as much about ruling out what it could be as it is identifying the potential symptoms.
Yeah.
And AI really isn't quite there yet.
Yeah.
And there's a whole host of other things. We worked last year on the bell-to-bell cell phone ban, and another bill that would get
in schools, the ban on cell phones in schools. Yep, yep.
And then there was a bill last year around stopping adults from messaging minors on social media platforms. We worked on that last year. This year we worked on kind of expanding that to include not just social media platforms, but Roblox or Call of Duty or other kinds of chat rooms where adults might message minors. You know, there's a lot, unfortunately, with tech and mental health that seems to be popping up right now.
Yeah. So, look, I did read that there was a discussion about a constitutional amendment about mental health care. Tell us about this.
Yes, that's something I've spoken on quite a bit. I think NAMI is the organization taking the lead on advocating for that bill, but we've worked on it with a couple of legal organizations as well. Right now, our New York State Constitution, it dating back to 1938, wrote in the duties of the state around public health and mental health. Within that text, it said that the state shall do things to address public health, but in its mental health section, it says may do things to address mental health. So, you know, it's not that New York State doesn't do a lot to address mental health. Obviously, we have an Office of Mental Health. We have an Office of Addiction Services and Supports. We have an Office of Persons with Disabilities. But that's all may. The state doesn't have to do that. They just shall. They may do that. They don't have to do that. That's what the shall language would say. So this constitutional amendment would have to pass the legislature, both houses, same term, and then pass again the very next year, both houses, same term, before it goes to a vote to all citizens of the state of New York. But we think that the movement is there right now. A lot of folks are really understanding the importance of mental health in society and for their family members, themselves, for a lot of the folks we've talked about already. And we think that they understand that the importance of having written into the state constitution, no, this is not optional. You have to do things to address mental health.
That's great. So it's sort of setting the foundation for future action. Is that right?
It's setting a foundation for future action and definitely preserving a lot of the action that we already have, right?
Yeah.
The next governor and next legislature can't come in and just say, actually, Office of Mental Health is too expensive. We're going to do away with the agency.
Yeah.
That'd be very hard to do. It's in other sections of state law.
Yeah.
But it's not as far off as people think, as the federal government has moved to potentially merge SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, the only federal agency tasked with addressing substance use and mental health, into the Agency for a Healthy America. So it does sound a little strange to think that we're preserving things like OMH or OASIS in New York State, but this is actually something we've seen at the federal level, people moving to kind of merge SAMHSA.
Good. Well, that is James Norton, Government and Community Affairs Manager for NAMI New York State. And James, if people would like more information about NAMI New York State, how can they get it?
So I highly recommend going to NAMINYS.org, NAMINYS.org. Right there, you'll see a couple placards about our education conference, our affiliates, where your local affiliate might be. You can request presentations or look at our advocacy page. If you go to our advocacy page, you'll see options to email your leaders, to register for our advocacy days, to look at our 2026 priorities, including what bills passed. And if you go to our email your leaders page, there's a way to email Governor Hochul asking her to sign some of the bills that I've talked about today. Our bill for the dual licensure, she's already signed, but there's 9 other bills on that list that we really hope to see signed as well. Mm. And one of the best things you can do is really join NAMI. It's $40 a year for an individual, $60 for a family or for a household. Mm. If you can't afford that, we have the open door, which is $5 a year. And, you know, really that is a little different than, say, donating $5, right? When we have members, it's something we can take to these legislatures and say, well, we have 5,000 members, but if we go there and say we have 10,000 members, that carries even more weight as we push these bills.
Great. Really good point. Well, James Norton, thank you so much for coming on to Health Center in the Catskills today, and thank you for all of your great advocacy work on this really important issue. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me on, and hopefully a number of folks hear this and get the urge to start advocating for mental health.
Sounds great. All right. Thank you, James. Come back on. Bye-bye.